You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 1913, the Union Parliament of South Africa passed the Natives Land Act, legislation which limited black South Africans to own up to 7% of the country's landmass. When the African National Congress gained political control in 1994, it promised to redistribute a third of the land within 10 years. But now, 16 years later, the process remains slow. And that's the subject of a documentary called Promised Land, which premieres tonight on the PBS series POV. Its director, Yoruba Richen, a former producer at ABC News and Democracy Now!, joins me to talk about it. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Start by explaining the Natives Land Act. Did black land owners have to leave their land?
Well, it's important to remember when you talk about land displacement in South Africa that before apartheid, the displacement had started happening at the turn of the century, all through Southern Africa. And in 1913, the Native Land Act was passed, which disallowed or prohibited black South Africans from owning land.
And this is when the British were in control, long before the National Party assumed power and instituted the policy of apartheid. But is there a direct link between the Natives Land Act and apartheid?
Absolutely. You're absolutely correct that the British were in control at that point. And when the National Party was voted in 1948 that instituted the official system of apartheid, the removals that had been put in place in terms of the Native Land Act accelerated and sped up. So you had these removals that were happening since 1913, and then from 1948 onward through the 90s, continued. And as one of the characters says in the film, it's estimated that up to 6 million black people were removed from their indigenous land in South Africa.
We're talking about only 7% of the land mass being made available anyway, and I'm assuming that it wasn't the best farmland.
Absolutely.
What was being grown on this farm?
Well, not much. I mean, there was at one point after apartheid took hold in 1948, they created homelands. And I believe that was in the late 1950s, 60s. And these were homelands. That's the 7% that you're talking about that Africans were allowed to be on. Mm-hmm. And these homelands, they were called homelands, essentially made black South Africans foreigners in their own land. So that in order to walk and be in the places that weren't the homelands or Bantustans, as they were known, you had to carry passes. You were stopped by the police, et cetera, et cetera. And these were, you know, these were the least farmable lands in the country.
Then in 1994, Nelson Mandela was elected, and the new African National Congress worked out a plan to redistribute 30% of the land. How was that to work?
Well, when Nelson Mandela was elected and the ANC took power, as one of their tenets had always been in their top 10 things that they were going to do when the freedom struggle was won, was to redistribute the land back to its people. It was like number two. And when they took power, as many of us know, in what was considered a compromise. I mean, the ANC was a socialist organization. That was its ideology. When it took power in 1995, the political realities of being a player on the international scene were apparent, and they had to make compromises. And
well, this is at the time when communism was falling apart.
Exactly, there was no Soviet Union anymore. And the one of the compromises that they made was that they were going to try to redistribute the land in what's called a willing buyer, willing seller framework, which is really a capitalist framework that means that the current white landowners have to agree to sell their land back to the government, negotiate a price, and the government would buy it back and give it to the people. And of course, as a couple of the characters say in the film, there really aren't any willing sellers. People don't really want to give up their land. And there's ways in which they can challenge the validity of the claim, which is what happens in the two stories I follow in the film. And there's also another big part of it is that they don't agree to the price that the government offers.
Right. You say validity of the claim. Somebody can say, well, gee, this was my land before 1913 and it was taken away from my family. So I have a right to it.
Exactly. And they can say that.
We're seeing similar problems in Germany right now, where people are saying, you know, my land was confiscated by the Nazis. And it's really very difficult, even on a much tighter time frame, to work those things out. I'm not sure it ever has been worked out.
Yeah, I'm not sure it has been either. And the other problem that is unique to the South African case is that the black land, the black claimants, in most cases, don't have title deed to the land. So the way in which the white landowners can disprove or challenge a claim is through this evidence. And evidence is very hard to find for the black claimants.
And one of the people in the documentary points out that while white history is documented, black history on the whole is not. But isn't there a further complication? A large part of this area was actually unpopulated until fairly late in history. And there were people moving in, blacks moving in, as well as whites in the 18th century. So it's a more complicated story, isn't it? Nobody can say, well, my family was here for millennia and you moved me off.
Well, it is true that there were some areas that were less populated or were occupied by nomadic groups or tribes. But the basic point that the black South Africans make is that the land, it's the land of their ancestors. It's the land that they come from, and they can point back to generations and generations of, you know, being on that land. And that this system was a unjust system that removed them and disallowed them to be and to own their land.
Some of the land at stake was originally sold by literate black landowners with legal representation. How were their ancestors arguing that they should own the land today?
Yes, that's one of the stories, the second story that I follow in the film. And it's the Malamu families, the descendants of Abra Malamu, who was in an unusual position in that he had title deed to his land. And he had, and they have documents showing that he, you know, owned this piece of land, and his sons were subsequently removed by the government. And he was compensated for being removed, essentially. What his descendants argue is that, again, because the system was unjust, he was forced to leave, and the compensation, and this is what the government found too, in no way really compensated for the loss of their land and their family structure disintegrated and what have you.
Are claims always over a specific plot of land, or do groups like the Malamus just want some land somewhere?
It's usually, as far as what I saw and my understanding, so for a specific area of land, because when the claimants make a claim, the government actually has to what's called validating the land claim. So the government goes through its own process of making sure that, you know, they believe it's a legitimate land claim. So it can't just be we want a piece of land. They have to have and prove in ways that they can that they have ownership to that land.
The other group that you talk about is the Mekarang. Now, they are educated, middle class.
Malamus are the educated.
Oh, they are Malamus.
Yeah.
The Mekarang are not. How do they navigate through a confusing bureaucratic process?
Well, it's been very difficult for them. And it's precisely because they don't have the resources that a group like the Malamus have. They have been fighting to get their land back for the past 10 years, really. And it has been a struggle just in terms of, even in terms of communication on the phone. I mean, phone lines can be very expensive in South Africa. Internet, those kinds of resources that you need to organize are very challenging for the group. But they have continued the fight. They are waiting for this court date. And it's also difficult because the government is in a funny position in that the government is supposed to represent the claimants in some ways, but they also have to adjudicate the situation and be fair to both sides.
And I'm sure they're very aware of all of the things that are going wrong in neighboring Zimbabwe and don't want to be accused of doing the same sort of thing.
Absolutely. And that's how I even started the film, because we started to hear here in the West some of the situation that was happening with what's called the fast-tracked land reform there and how it was, you know, putting the country into really dire straits. And I discovered soon that South Africa had the same land inequality and was now under a lot of pressure to deal with it to avoid the Zimbabwe situation.
My guess is Yoruba Richen, who has made a film called Promised Land, which is being shown tonight as part of the PBS POV series. One of the arguments that we hear in Zimbabwe and in South Africa as well is from people who say, well, you know, my family came here 300 years ago. I'm an African. I'm not, you know, you can't talk about me as though I'm some kind of white colonialist.
Absolutely. And that's all throughout the film as well. And I, at least the characters that I followed in terms of the claimants, it wasn't necessarily about trying to, you know, take away that African identity from the white landowners, but it was when the freedom struggle was won, Mandela and the ANC, they instituted all part of their policies what were steeped in reconciliation, racial reconciliation. And the belief from the government and from, you know, from the population, majority of population, this is part of racial reconciliation. And as Africans, white and black and other colors as well, we have to figure out how we're going to deal with this situation.
Could there perhaps be an issue that if white landowners willingly sell their land, they're admitting an individual culpability for apartheid?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the case. And one of my characters, a very interesting character named Roger Roman, says exactly that. And it's very hard. I mean, it's very hard, I think, for anybody to admit culpability for historical wrongs that you may not have personally had a part in.
You talked with Johan Pretorius, whose land has been owned by his family since the 1850s, way before the 1913 Act. He expresses concern that his country will go the way of other African nations, Mozambique, Angola, Congo, Zimbabwe, where whites were evicted, blacks were given the land, and chaos often ensued. That can be overcome to some degree if there's a certain amount of education. Because if part of that chaos was people then didn't know what to do with the land that they were taking over. Is that part of this process?
Absolutely. It has to be part of the process. You hit the nail on the head. It's not only education, but you also have to remember that when the whites were given the land, you know, from that had been taken from the black people, they received major resources from the government to start their farms and training to start their farms to build these businesses that, you know, that fed the nation. And of course, the black new claimants have to have the same thing as well, or else it's not going to work. And that is where I'm going to be premiering the film in South Africa in August. And the panels and forums that are going to be taking place around the film are about exactly that. What do we do? What does the country do when the land is returned?
Well, how close are they to the 30% promise?
Not very close. Not very close. And they keep pushing the date. The first time it was 1995, and they said in 5 years, 30%. It was pushed to 2014. Now I think it's 2025. And a lot of experts agree that if the situation remains how it is, they're not going to meet that goal either. It's very, very difficult and complicated, and you know, they're not there yet.
Well, I'm sure the ANC is very conscious of what has happened in other parts of Africa when Idi Amin expelled people, foreigners, not just whites, but Indians as well. Economic chaos ensued. And then later governments said, come back. Many people didn't come back because they'd already established lives elsewhere. I don't know what would happen to the South African economy if we had an immediate 30% takeover of the land.
Well, first of all, the ANC had, it was always their goal to keep its white population. Again, when they took power, it wasn't about revenge or it wasn't about kicking the whites out.
As you said, which reconciliation.
Which is different than, you know, maybe different than in other places. And they, you know, an immediate takeover, it's been 16 years. It hasn't been, you know, it hasn't been immediate. And the unrest now that exists without redistribution is only going to increase.
Because the word ticking time bomb keep on coming up in this conversation. There are a lot of people who are restless who say, well, gee, I want my land. And you can understand their impatience.
Absolutely.
They assume that when the political system changed, that things would change for them. And we still have Soweto and we still have incredible poverty in the black population.
Absolutely. And we've seen this with the World Cup. You know, there were landless communities that were living in shanty towns that were cleared out to make way for stadiums and buildings for the World Cup. And of course, the irony is that this time it's the black government that are enforcing these removals.
And where did those displaced people go?
I don't have the answer to that. There are.
Is this your next film?
There actually are a couple of films that are being made currently on the situation and the movements around the World Cup.
And what's your next project?
My next project is basically, it's here in the U.S. and it's an investigation looking at the relationship between the African American civil rights movements and communities and the gay rights movement, and how and why these two communities keep clashing, especially in the wake of the gay marriage issue.
Your film premieres tonight on PBS. What time?
It's going to be at 10:30 here in New York City, but check your local listings because it's different times.
And then it's available online at pbs.org beginning tomorrow.
Absolutely. And you can watch it online for 3 months.
All right. Yoruba Rishon, thank you so much for being with us. I hope I pronounced your last name correctly.
You have. It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
The film Promised Land on PBS tonight is part of the POV series, 10:30 in New York on Channel 13.
Yes.
It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.